This is Teddy Teapot with Teddy Mellencamp.
Hi, guys. Welcome to this week's Teddy Teapot. I am hosting with my bestie, Matt. Hi, Matt.
Hi. This is very exciting.
I'm so excited. You guys don't understand. I talk to Matt probably more than I speak to anybody else in my entire life. And Edwin is so grateful to Matt because Matt is my sounding board. He's my therapist. He's all the things.
Yeah, so you're one of the very few people that I actually answer the phone for.
I know, but I can hear it in your voice sometimes that you're dreading it.
Well, nobody likes a phone call.
Well, no one people like less than a phone call is a voicemail.
Oh, right.
Like I
said, hey, it's me.
Hey, it's me. Call me back. Really? Thank you.
The worst is when you text someone and they call you. No.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The actual worst is when you get a text that says, hey, do you have a sec? Why? Don't be vague. Oh, my gosh. Well, this week we are going to be talking all things hospitals, all things baby Dove. And I wanted to bring you on with me, Matt, because like you always make me laugh and like see the light in every situation. We're going to have Dove surgeon on, we're going to have a nurse, and we're also going to have a mom who was just expecting during COVID-19 and had to go into labor. And, you know, we're going to hear all her stories. So we have so much to talk about.
Yeah, of course. You know, speaking of like when we text you, I can always tell when there's something going on with you when you don't, you know, aren't responsive right away. And I remember when that had happened the day that you had found out about what was going on with Dove. And you were debating whether or not you should, you know, go public with what's going on with Dove. So what was the ultimate like catalyst that made you say, you know what, I'm just going to talk about it, put it out there?
You know, I had so much anxiety because there's so many unknowns already. And, you know, I'm one of those people that once I go on WebMD, it's just a disaster because then I go down all the different hypotheticals. But because this wasn't like something involving me, it was something involving Dove, I really just wanted to be positive and think positive thoughts. And like, it was so important to me to have that. And I really just started thinking like, I don't know why I want to share this. I don't know if I want to share it solely because I want to hear other people's stories or because I want people not to go through the same exact situation that I did where they weren't prepared or didn't know what to look for or whatever it may be. But it was a combination of the both. Like, I think I truly needed the support. I didn't realize that's why I was doing it at first from other families who have gone through this. But also, I think, you know, I wanted to be transparent about what's going on because a big part of who I am is someone who wants to be open and authentic with what's going on in my life. And all of a sudden, if there's just a huge shift and all of a sudden I go dark or whatever it may be, I didn't want to feel like I was like coming up with some alternate reason why.
Yeah. I mean, I love that, especially, you know, right now and using your platform to like show other mothers that you are going through this, because we kind of look at people who have, you know, influential social media accounts and are on TV, and for you to use your platform to showcase something that maybe a lot of people aren't aware of, and there are other mothers going out there with it right now, I just think it's really good for you to put it out there and talk about it.
Thank you. And I honestly, I'm so excited to have Dr. Urata on because there are so many questions that so many people have asked, like whether they're going through it or not. And I think the craziest part about when you are in a public forum of any types is there's so much that happens if you go to make a mistake, like if I were to pronounce a word wrong, or if I were to say not exactly the right thing, people will jump all over you. And that's another huge reason. Like, I want all of the, you know, information directly from the surgeon explaining it because I want people to have the information correct. But I also don't want this to become another topic like, oh, Teddy messed up this wording or said this, and like, because that's not what this is about. And I hate that there can sometimes be that judgment when it comes to your kids and talking about things that are going on, because we're not doctors, we're just doing the best that we can.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I've been avoiding saying Chris whatever it is this past 5 minutes. I don't even want to let the doctor tell us how to pronounce it.
Well, I think I know. I think it's lambdoid craniosynostosis. That being said, I absolutely cannot pronounce Dr. Rotter's title. I have tried for the last 20 minutes. I talked to Siri about it. I still don't have it. So yeah, that's really where we are with that. So we're going to let him give us his
expertise.
I don't even know the word, but so excited to bring him on and then get grilling away.
So, you know, Dove surgery is tomorrow. How are you feeling? Are you, you know, feeling good?
I feel like I have a lot of nerves. I'm trying my best to stay focused on just being calm as I possibly can for her. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns on how she's going to react from like little things. Like she normally sleeps from 7 to 7 and then has her first bottle at 7. Tonight I'm going to feed her at 1 a.m. because she can't eat tomorrow morning because we need to be at the hospital at 5:15 and she's not allowed to have a bottle before her 7 a.m. surgery. So I'm going to try to, you know, I'm going to dream feed her tonight in hopes to take the edge off tomorrow morning and then just really try to keep her as relaxed as possible, like before it happens. But it's like one of those things, you know, I've been through surgery, you know, a couple times with Slate and, you know, she's older. So she's talking you through what's going on, what her emotions are. I mean, I don't really know what to expect. I mean, I've talked to, you know, them a little bit, but like, I don't know in regards to the ICU, what I'm allowed to bring in regards to, you know, for Dub, all those types of things. So, you know, it's, Edwin's allowed to come with me the day of the surgery, but then he can't stay there. So it'll be solely me for the, you know, for the 6 or 7 days because I'm going to have him with the older kids.
Oh man.
Yeah. Because that's a whole nother dynamic because you want to make sure, like another big thing is like, not only do I want to make sure Dove is 100% supported, it's like, I want to make sure the big kids aren't worrying.
Yeah.
So like if both of us are gone, they're going to, you know, wonder. So I guess, you know, I'm just going to try to do the best I can. I've packed like a week early. I'm, you know, as type A as you could possibly be. And at this moment, I'm not emotional. I know once, you know, she goes into surgery, I'm going to be a wreck.
Yeah, but you'll handle it. I mean,
I know. You,
don't stress. But can we talk about dream feeding real quick?
Yes.
If I get up at 1 a.m. after a few glasses of rosé and have a bag of chips, is that also dream feeding? Is that just a
no? If you're getting up and doing it yourself, it's not dream feeding. I guess if George feeds you chips while you're sleeping, that's a dream feed.
Cool. I'm just gonna look into that after.
Oh my gosh. Well, we don't need to. I don't think we probably need to ask Dr. Arata if chips in the middle of the night. But we do have to ask him a lot of questions, so I'm excited to bring him on. I am so excited to have on Dove surgeon, Dr. Arata. He is so incredibly smart and has made me feel so much better about this entire process. When I posted about what's going on with Dove, I had an overwhelming response from either people who have had children that have gone through something similar or people asking for questions like, how do you know if this is going on with my child, et cetera, what to look for, timeframes. So I would love to talk to you about it. I also want to give you a proper introduction, but I can't pronounce half the words in your bio. So can you possibly tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, so I'll give you the abbreviated version. So I am a craniofacial surgeon by training. Essentially what I do is I reconstruct children due to pathology or trauma or birth defects. I work at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, where I'm the chief of plastic and maxillofacial surgery there. I also happen to be in charge of all of plastic surgery at USC, at the Keck School of Medicine of the University of Southern California. So I oversee the entire enterprise of faculty that are responsible for breast reconstruction and taking care of patients with burns and critical care in hand injuries as well. And then aside from that, I happen to have trained as a dentist and an oral surgeon, so that helps me in taking care of and reconstructing kids. So I'm also chair of the Department of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery in the dental school at USC, the Ostrow School of Dentistry. So sort of a geek, if you will.
I love that. You know what? You want a geek working on your child for sure.
Yeah.
And you are going to be doing this surgery with Dr. Danielpour. And what kind of surgeon is he?
So Dr. Danielpour is a pediatric neurosurgeon. So I spend most of my time with pediatric neurosurgeons. So together we're working to reconstruct children, oftentimes on the brain. And so Dr. Danielpour is going to be my partner, and I'll be his partner in taking care of your daughter.
Well, I am really grateful for that. And how would you explain lambdoid craniosynostosis to somebody?
So I think the best way to think about this, Teddy, is that kids, when they are born, their brain grows so rapidly. In fact, by 18 months, about 70 or 80% of the adult brain size is reached. So in order for the brain to grow that quickly, the bone can't grow that quickly and the bone can't stretch. And so we have gaps in our skulls, and they are called sutures. And those sutures essentially spread apart as the brain is growing, and then bone is deposited slowly there. Every once in a while, one of those gaps or sutures becomes sticky or closed, and that's what we call craniosynostosis. And so that's what Dove has, is that one of those, you know, sutures has closed prematurely. When it closes prematurely, the brain continues to push, but now it tends to push out in different areas because it can no longer push out where that suture is.
And does that always happen in utero?
We don't know the answer to that. We'd love to know the answer to that. I think most of our research indicates that it probably does occur in utero, and that it then begins to manifest in the first few months of life. But I can tell you, as is your experience and others, that sometimes it's not diagnosed till a little bit later. Because many kids come out through the birth canal and at birth having heads that are a little misshapen, either because they had suction delivery or forceps delivery, or simply because of their position in utero. And so it's difficult sometimes to decipher what is a synostotic baby, one in which the suture is closed, and a baby who simply has a little bit of a misshapen head because of the way they were sitting, for example, in the pelvis.
Yeah, I mean, with Dove, we had gone in for our 3-month appointment, and the pediatrician had told us, there's a good chance she's going to need a doc band like your son because of torticollis. But if you want, you can start on physical therapy right now. And that's what we had done. So between her 3-month and her 4-month appointment, she was doing physical therapy. And then at her 4-month appointment, immediately she was like, before we have you go in to get the doc band, I actually want you to go to the neurosurgeons. But she hadn't said why. And it was a blessing, because what ended up happening was they did the CT scan, as you know, and we found out what was happening. But I had asked her, I said, how many kids have you seen? Like, because I was emotional afterwards. Like, I was like, why didn't you warn me before I went in? She's like, because I wasn't sure, but I had to, you know, have you follow the proper protocols. And I didn't want to just send you the doc band place. And, you know, and I said, well, how many had you ever seen? And she said, none.
Yeah.
So how common is this?
Not common. So for synostosis, so there are different gaps with different names on the skull. There's the sagittal suture, the coronal, the lambdoidal, the metopic, the squamosal. And of all of those, the rarest actually is the lambdoidal synostosis. So a typical synostosis case is about one in every 2,500 births. Lambdoid, because it's the rarest, is about one in every 10,000 births. So you could definitely, as a pediatrician, go through your practice existence and likely not see any of these, or perhaps maybe see one or two, depending on the volume of your practice and the diversity of it. So it's a fairly rare entity.
How is there any outward like sign that parents could look for, or is it only diagnosed via like a CT scan? And so if that's only, you know, diagnosed through a CT scan, how do you know that your child even has it to begin with? Like what is the deciding factor to send a child in for a scan to look for it?
You know, great question. And Teddy had mentioned that there can be torticollis, which is a tightening of one side or of the neck muscle. And when babies have that, which is fairly common, they can sleep only on one side, preferably, because they sleep on one side and their skulls are relatively soft. Over time, their skull can flatten out. And that's something called positional or deformational plagiocephaly. Now, that does not require any surgery. And we treat that either with taking care of the torticollis with physical therapy, and sometimes we'll deploy a helmet if the parents want to help shape the head, because the brain pushes out and the helmet helps to shape the head. So it's really hard, I think, for pediatricians and certainly for parents to decipher between something that's positional or deformational plagiocephaly and something that is pretty rare, which is craniosynostosis. And that's where I come in, and many pediatricians will send these patients to me. I will do about one or two of these operations a week. And we're one of the busiest, or I should say I'm probably one of the busier craniofacial surgeons in the country. So that's, you know, that tells you a little bit about how rare this actually is.
And why does it, something that people keep asking that I definitely don't know the answer to. I know that when you guys are going to go do on Dove, she's going to have the zigzag incision. Why is it going to be that versus the endoscopic treatment?
Yeah, that's another great question. The earlier that we diagnose, depending on the surgeons, first of all, because surgeons have different preferences and different comfort zones with different techniques. And some surgeons believe soundly that the endoscopic approach is the best for some synostosis, or in fact for all synostosis. And there are other surgeons such as myself that believe the endoscopic approach has its place, but I wouldn't utilize it for every synostotic case. One thing that I think all surgeons could probably agree on is if you don't have the child when they're young, meaning 2 or 3 months, it becomes a lot harder for the endoscopic approach to be effective, because again, you are reliant on that exponential growth of the brain to shape the head. So in Dove's case, I'm going to shape the head. So that's, we're gonna take some pieces apart like a jigsaw puzzle and put them back together in a way that gives us a natural shape that she should have. And that's something that we do when they're a little bit older, but when they are 2 or 3 or 4 months, they then become candidates to have that sticky suture taken out and then put a helmet on them and have the brain shape the head.
So I know that Dove will end up having to have the helmet as well afterwards. Do you think that babies, regardless of the type of surgery, do you think they remember any of it?
No, I don't. I mean, that's a much more difficult question to answer. But I think that most of us on this call probably don't remember much before the age of 5 years old. Do the experiences that we have before we're 5 affect us? And I think our assumptions, at least in a pediatric atmosphere, are to some degree, yes. And that's why in most children's hospitals, certainly at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, the babies that we operate on don't get poked or prodded. Same with Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, where this procedure is going to be done. The kids actually don't get any pain or don't have any procedures that are painful prior to them going to sleep in the operating room.
So can you walk me through that process? Because I know that I'm arriving at 5:15 with Dove. She can't eat before 1 a.m. But what will it look like once we get there? Because I know this would affect anybody, even if their child isn't having this type of surgery, but just going into surgery at this age.
Yeah, totally understand. Well, first of all, the younger the child, and certainly this is an infant, we try to do those, you know, take care of those babies and operate on them early in the morning, because they don't understand if you say we're not going to give you anything to eat or drink. Babies don't understand that. That would be a horrible afternoon waiting if you were trying to do an operation on a kid in the afternoon. So those kids get operated on very early in the morning because of that. Obviously, it's for most parents, it's a challenging evening before, just fraught with the typical anxiety that any of us parents would feel if our child were to undergo an operation. And so I would say you show up at the hospital, you check in. There's generally an examination of the baby, either by a nurse practitioner and an anesthesiologist together to verify that child is not sick, hasn't gotten sick in the past few days, and is a good candidate on this morning for surgery. Sometimes kids will come in and they'll have fevers on the day of surgery, and this is still considered a semi-elective surgery, so it's a surgery that would then get delayed. So that's the first process that you go through, is to make sure that the baby's healthy and doing well. And once you're checked in, then obviously the nice thing is that even in this COVID environment, you know, you're with the child. And then at some point, then we usually will give the baby a little juice, a little medicine that will make them relaxed and actually make them forget, so that they don't forget the trip from your arms to the operating room. So the last thing that they will remember is being with you. And the first thing that they will remember is being with you, because they will wake up and you will be by the bedside and perhaps even holding her. So in our minds, that's how we can best take care of these kids, is to make sure that they feel like they're with mom or dad all the time. But what that medication, like I said, does is it makes you forget. And so we take the babies back into the operating room. And at that point, we allow them to breathe through usually a scented mask, and that allows them to fall asleep. So again, no IVs. If you were having a surgery, we would say to you, I'm going to put an IV in your arm. It's going to hurt a little bit, but you're an adult and you would understand that, and kids don't. So they fall asleep. Once they're asleep, then we put the IVs in. And then after the IVs go in, then we put a breathing tube, which so we can control their breathing throughout the procedure.
And what exactly do you think that recovery looks like? That's actually been one of the biggest things, like from the support side, from other parents who have gone through similar surgeries, is they're like, listen, we're warning you, like, it is going to be hard when she comes out, when you first see her. And that, you know, it's harder on the parent than it is on the baby, but like, it's going to be a shock for you. And so I'm not really sure why there's, you know, I'm kind of gone down the rabbit hole on that, but I was just curious.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of rabbit holes on the internet. I would say that for some kids, that's true. If you are operating, if we have a suture in the front of the head or the forehead that's closed, then most certainly they swell up and their eyes swell shut. But for lambdoidal synostosis, because it involves the sutures or the gaps on the back of the head, that's generally not the case. So I would say that I think in comparison, Dove will do relatively well. There's definitely peak swelling on day two. That's true for any baby or any human.
Peak swelling, that's what you said?
Yes, swelling on day two. And then it will start to go down from there over the next few weeks.
Is there any kind of scarring to anticipate? And will it affect like any kind of hair growth or the hairline at all?
Yeah, another good question. The incision that we make is from the top of one ear to the top of the other ear, and it is designed in a zigzag fashion. And the reason why it's designed as a zigzag is the hair on the sides of our head grows down. So the more horizontal this scar is, the more the hair will cover it up as the child is growing. And particularly with girls, the scar is rarely visible. But in direct answer to your question, wherever there is scar, hair does not grow within the scar itself. So there will be a few millimeters where there's not any hair in it. And if that were a real concern, there are some patients that either get hair transplant into scars, or sometimes they get it tattooed dark if they have darker hair. But for the most part, it's not visible and nobody does anything about it.
And what if somebody were to opt to not have the surgery done?
Well, we don't, that's a question that we don't have a lot of great answers to. And you and I have talked about this before. And in order for us to really, so we do this operation for two reasons. One reason is we're afraid not to do the operation, meaning we're concerned that if we don't do the operation, that there's a possibility that there could be pressure on the brain, and that could in turn affect the development of the brain. Now, of course, we don't have solid proof of that, because for us to have solid proof, we will have to have had twins, both of whom we know had the same level of intelligence, both had synostosis, and then operate on one, not operate on the other, and then do developmental testing throughout their life. And of course, there's no parent that would ever consent to that. And not only that, but you would have to repeat that same thing probably 100 times for the study to be valid. But we do know that when there's pressure on the brain due to trauma and other things, that that can affect the brain adversely. And so we extrapolate from that and say we probably should release any possible pressure on the brain so that development is unhindered. The second reason that we do the operation is these kids often will look funny or look different if we don't do the operation. And that we do know definitely affects their development. Most of us have had some experience sometime within our childhood or our friends or our peers where there was something about them physically that made them stand out and made them the focus of some teasing. So we do know that if kids, if their heads are not shaped reasonably symmetrically, that can draw attention, unwanted attention.
And for a parent who maybe their child has been diagnosed with torticollis or positional, I'm going to say the word wrong, but
plagiocephaly.
And they're curious if there's a chance that it's something else. What do you recommend they do? Because I do know that I was told, you know, you're actually lucky you didn't go right to the doc band because that could have done some harm if you had immediately put her in the helmet. And because then all of a sudden, you know, you're shaping her head in a way that couldn't actually be fixed because she needed the surgery. So how do people know what to do? Or do you ask for a CT scan or?
No, I don't think you ask for a CT scan. I think a CT scan has to be ordered with prudence because there's radiation involved and sometimes the kids can't hold still. So there's some level of anesthesia. For babies that need to be administered for kids to be able to undergo a CT scan. And I also, helmet companies are excellent at what they are designed to do, which is to help shape the head, but usually under the direction of a physician. So my advice would be if you're concerned about an abnormal shape on your child's head, that your first stop is going to be your pediatrician always. Pediatricians are generally fairly adept at having seen different types of shaped heads. And for the most part, they can tell which of those require or which of those would be amenable to helmet therapy. And I think pediatricians, if they're not confident, then they would refer them to somebody like myself or Dr. Daniel Poor, who are a craniofacial plastic surgeon or a neurosurgeon. Those are the two experts that deal with this.
And then if you had one piece of advice for parents with kids going into surgery during this time, any type of surgery, what would it be?
You know, I don't know if it's as much advice as it is a comment to mothers in particular that I often will say to moms that this is nothing that you did. So this happens by chance. And I do research having to do with the molecular causes of craniosynostosis, of which we're learning more every year, but still don't have the exact answers. I do know that mothers, having taken care of kids for many, many years, that mothers can sometimes carry guilt around that they don't acknowledge themselves. And I think it's important to let them know this is a sporadic entity, and it wasn't a cup of coffee they had in the second trimester or a bump against the bed that they had when they were in the first trimester. And outside of that, they just need to trust the surgeons that are taking care of their child. And that's the way that I see it as a surgeon. For 4 to 6 hours or less, your child is gonna be in my hands and that's my responsibility. And that's my job.
Well, thank you so much. Made me a little emotional saying that, because for whatever reason, it really, we do carry around a lot of guilt, and we carry it because we just want what's best for our kids. And I am so grateful to you and Dr. Daniel Poor that you're going to be working on Baby Dove. And I look forward to having a conversation after about how successful it was. And thank you for educating my listeners, for talking with Matt and I, and for everything that you're doing. We are so grateful.
Of course. It's my pleasure. And we'll see you later this week and we'll have that conversation.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Aw, she's in such good hands.
I know.
She's in really good hands. She's going to be just fine. And he just told you there's nothing you could have done, so you can't be hard on yourself. And
I know, I'm just getting scared.
Don't be scared.
I know.
It's going to be great.
you know, the reason I'm so grateful to be doing this with you right now is like Edwin is so like so calm with all of this, and like I am just trying so hard. Like I'm having waves. Like you can hear at like the beginning of our conversation, I can laugh and like joke, and then all of a sudden it like hits me, something that he says or something that somebody says or something that I read online. I think I'm just so looking forward to this not being an unknown anymore and just knowing 100% that she's feeling good. And I know that it's going to happen. I know in my heart and I have faith that it's going to happen. I don't know why it's like these emotions keep creeping in. I think
you can have the emotions. They're natural. And we're in a heightened state right now. Like it's a whole new world in general. So you have your emotions and you'll still be there to be strong for your baby girl and she's gonna be great. And that shining face.
I'll be ignoring your text like crazy that day.
That's fine. Ignore me all you want. You know what you need? You need a dream drink.
I don't know if you're allowed to drink it at Cedars. Let's pull myself together a little bit before we bring on our next guest. So let's take a little break and we'll come right back. Thank you so much for joining Teddy Teapot. You are on with Matt and me, and we are so excited to talk all things having a baby during the pandemic. Yeah. So, I mean, so crazy. I had Dove right before, like it was the point where people had just started talking about it, but like both parents could be there the entire time. We could have a couple of visitors, but like masks weren't a part of anything yet. So will you walk us through your experience and when actually did you give birth?
I delivered on May 2nd. So as my doctor liked to put it, it was the eye of the storm. And it was sort of like a weird slow build because things were changing so much like in the month leading into when I delivered, that initially my husband was going to be allowed to come and he could stay the whole time. And then right before New York hospital shut down completely. And so there was talk like no visitors and I would have to do it by myself. And that was a little scary. But then like the week I delivered, they changed the rules and he could stay for both my delivery and postpartum because initially they were going to kick him out after I delivered. But I couldn't have any visitors. He had to stay the entire time. He couldn't come or go. So it was definitely.
And what was the deal with the mask? Did you have to wear your mask during delivery?
Up until I started pushing, I had to wear the mask. I couldn't leave the delivery room. So the room that, like, yeah, I wasn't, usually you can like walk the halls and do stuff like that. I wasn't allowed to do that. I could just do it in the room. And we had to have masks on anytime anybody came in. We had to put them on if we hadn't taken them off. And then it wasn't until I started pushing that I could take it off.
And really and let loose. I said it just really let loose.
Wow. And so your family couldn't come and nobody was able to or anything like that. Has anybody been able to since?
Yeah. So the pediatrician finally kind of gave him like a semi-clearance to meet the grandparents at the end of June, which is when he got his first round of vaccinations. But up until then, both of our parents are first-time grandparents, so it was like killing them to not be able to meet him and hang out and even be there. Like my mom was going to come down and stay for a month with me, and she couldn't do that because they were like not allowing anybody to visit him because of everything.
And also talking about doctor's appointments, I know for us, we've been having to go to a lot of doctor's appointments with my daughter, mm-hmm. Dove, and only one of us can take her. Is that, how did it go with your first doctor's appointment? Were you able to be there or?
It was, we were allowed one person. So my husband took him, so I didn't get to go. And that was kind of a bummer, but you know, at least one of us got to go with him. But yeah, to not be there, it's kind of weird to not see him go through like his first measurements and kind of, you know, it's like things that you want to do as a family that we weren't able to get to do.
Did you FaceTime during it or no, were you not able to?
No, but my husband is like, he takes photos of everything. So I was able to kind of get like almost like a flip book of photos of how it went down. But and I was tired too, so it was okay.
This was your first pregnancy since.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah.
I mean, this just proves that women are stronger than men. Right? For you to go through this, and it's going to be an interesting story when we get to the other side of it for you to tell your son later in life.
Yeah.
If you look like a positive thing to look at it, like it'll be a story to tell.
Oh, I know. And we laugh because we're like, when he gets to, you know, world history and U.S. history in junior high and high school, he will have been born during everything. So it's a strange time for sure. And not one I had envisioned, not how I gave, like, imagined going through it all, but.
And how are you feeling now postpartum? I know that, you know, with my other kids, it was such a different experience. You know, of course I was like home for the first 6 weeks, but then I was like kind of on the go with them and we were doing mm-hmm. baby classes and all these different things. And with Dove, we've primarily, like, unless we're going to a doctor's appointment, we're home. Yeah. So how are you feeling?
I feel a little cooped up for sure. I can't even go to the grocery store without coordinating with, you know, my husband to make sure that because I can't take him to the store because of all the germs. Whereas if it was just a regular, you know, non-pandemic time, I could just go and run my errands and do things. So it's definitely been a challenge. I like to be on the go as it is. So to be kind of like hunkered down. I feel lucky I didn't get postpartum or anything like that, but it's a weird feeling to not be able to do, like, have the freedom to do stuff because you have a little baby you're trying to protect.
And I think that in so many of what you just said is so many of us are feeling right now, regardless mm-hmm. if it's a baby or it's work or whatever it may be. We are just in such a place of the unknown. And what I yeah. keep trying to remind myself, and I'm sure what you're thinking as well, is like, wow, but the great news is that I have a healthy, you know, happy baby and all these things. And we're trying our best to stay positive. But I did a mm-hmm. podcast last week about somebody talked about toxic positivity. So just being able to share like those ups and downs is really what makes us all feel so connected right now. So I really appreciate you talking with us and yeah. like sharing your story. And I think there's so many parents out there that are going through this and the unknowns of what happens if I give birth in a month from now, or what happens if it's in mm-hmm. the, you know, in the fall, or, and none of us know, but all we know is that we really are all in this together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do feel lucky because I got to go to every single doctor's appointment leading up to my delivery. I have friends who are pregnant now that they have to do them via Zoom, you know, and
it's, I know that's true. I have a pregnant friend now, and she even went in for, like, you know, where they have like the fetal medicine doctor, the specialist, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and like her husband had to wait outside in the car.
Yeah.
So that's happening a lot now. And I think it's becoming like the new normal. And it's hard because those are the moments that you really want to bond with your significant other and yeah. say, like, hey, like, look at the, you know, and these are these great mm-hmm. monumental moments. But I think we start to learn that there's other things that you can start to enjoy together because it really is crazy.
No, I was just gonna say, I'm curious, leading up to, like, when you were, feel like you were about to give birth, did they test you often for COVID going, like, to prepare or anything, or no, they never even
I mean, they took my temperature when I got to the hospital, but I never had to get, like, an official test or anything, but I had also been quarantined. My doctor kind of pulled the plug on me going out before the mass lockdown happened. So I had been kind of homebound for a while. So I knew.
You gave birth, you didn't have to take the COVID test.
Mm-mm. I just
had
my first
time a C-section, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was not planned. So that was a nice surprise. But yeah, so I actually took my mask off to push, and then he wasn't coming out. So they had to wheel me to the OR. So in between pushing, I had to put my mask back on, go to the OR. I had to have it on in the OR when I delivered. So it was,
wow.
You know, they put the medicine, the gas mask on, and then they put the mask back on.
You are a strong mama, and we are grateful that you shared your story with us.
Thank you.
We wish the best to you and your family, and hope to talk to you one day again soon.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. You are on with myself and Matt on the Teddy Teapot. And we have to say thank you for all the incredible work that you do. Rebecca is a surgical nurse who has a really amazing backstory that I'm hoping you can share with our listeners.
Hey, Teddy, thank you so much for having me. This is a great platform, and I'm excited to be a part of it. My background story is primarily in the military and civilian. I have 24 years in the operating room, 5 years active duty Air Force, 18 years reserves, and I've always been in surgery from the trauma side to neurosurgery, spine, orthopedics, and it's my true love. It's been a blessing that I have the job that I have, and love going to work every day.
And what do you think the overall mental health is of people, you know, either coming into the hospital or working into the hospital right now?
We're kind of, you know, as nurses, I think we have the survivors all around. We dealt with pandemics before. We dealt with infectious diseases. I think the mental health has definitely seen a really scary decline. I think for all of us, whether you're in the hospital, whether you're at home alone, whether you're at home with your family, it's a huge awakening for us all. So I think it's really the isolation, the fear. You know, whenever people say to me, Rebecca, I'm so scared, I have to really ask them, what are you afraid of, right? Are you afraid to go out of your house to get the coronavirus? Are you afraid to come to the hospital because you might contract coronavirus? So I think once people really can articulate what their fears are, and then they can kind of grasp on how we're going to live with this, right, for probably 1-2 years, who knows? Because it's not going away.
Right.
I will say honestly myself, just speaking for personal experience, you know, I go to the dentist for teeth cleaning, for my annual physical, and I won't make an appointment just because I can barely go to Trader Joe's without having a panic attack. So what do you feel like? Do you feel there's not that much risk, say, going to the dentist if somebody wanted to go get their teeth cleaned?
I can personally say I've been to the dentist twice. I had to get a root canal. As soon as this all happened, I'm going in to get my mouth guard fitted tomorrow. It's probably the safest we'll ever be or have ever been going to your primary care or dentist office. You know, they wear masks, they wear gloves, they have face shields. Everyone's screened. Everything's disinfected. I think the risk is very minimal.
And what about, you know, I'm going into the hospital with my baby daughter, and I heard you say that you worked as a surgical nurse and neurosurgery. Do you know what it's kind of like for somebody in the hospital with their baby right now for an extended period of time? Like, I'm trying to envision it because it's so different than when you give birth. But I know that I'm going to be in the ICU with her for 2 days, and then I think they move us out of the ICU. But like, what am I going to be able to like hold her and comfort her and do all those things? Or is she going to be pretty hooked up?
Mm-hmm. Teddy, are you going to a children's specialty hospital, or is it
I'm going to Cedars.
Okay. So every hospital has different protocols for how long you can go into the hospital. You will be screened every day. You'll have to wear a mask. They'll probably provide you a mask when you go in. And some hospitals have time limits. Some hospitals have number of visitors per day. And
They're letting me stay with her, but Edwin, my husband, can't. But I'm just curious, like, after a surgery like that, and maybe you're not sure, but how much we're allowed to be, you know, I guess, like, holding them. I that's an answer that I don't fully know right now.
Right. You should be able to hold her. She's under the age of one, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I would say yes. It just really depends also. I mean, maybe not in the ICU immediately after. It will depend on what monitor she has. And like I said, just you're going to be able to be there 24/7 with her. They've established that.
They said I could be there 24/7. My husband can only be there during the surgery and seeing her when she comes out of,
okay,
of surgery, and then he has to go. Then it's one turn.
Okay. And that, I mean, that's pretty liberal. I think that's great. I would say yes, you'll be able to hold her. You'll be able to be with her. And, you know, it's, don't get overwhelmed with the monitors. They can be scary. Just really just keep something to distract yourself with, a book, a podcast. Yeah. I understand your fear though, but I just took my daughter to the hospital last week. I didn't have any fear of her coming in and the coronavirus. It's all very, very well cleaned, sanitized. Everyone's wearing masks. It's just, like, this is probably the safest time to go anywhere.
Okay. Oh, well, I hate to leave this on a somber note, but I guess that's kind of where we are at this moment. But thank you so much for sharing your story and honestly for all that you do. And if there's any, like, I take a lot of, it makes me feel good to hear you say that this is the safest, that you could go to the hospital or that you could go to the dentist or you could do those things, because, you know, I think it's really important for everyone to know that, like, if you're in pain or you're hurting or something's going on, that you can still get treatment right now. You can still get help, and we shouldn't be afraid to seek treatment or get help, regardless if it's physical or mental or whatever it may be, that we are protected.
I think so. I think we've all been so inundated with the fear and the numbers. You know, I always tell people, just look locally in your community, you know, go onto your county dashboard and really look at the numbers and what those numbers mean. You know, it's going to be a risk for a long time, but going out in public, you know, I mean, here in California, everyone has to wear a mask, right?
Right.
I'm not going to go to a big beach party or, you know, even a huge dinner party I probably wouldn't go to. But I think if you keep your friends close and your family close, go to Trader Joe's, wear a mask, use hand sanitizer when you're done. I think those are all very, I personally think those are all very good decisions. And like I said, we have to live our lives, right? And the risk, look at your local risk. And yeah, it's a sad time, but I think if we can all put in perspective where we are and what we need to do and how we need to live, and yeah, you know, get out of your house. Yeah. Go shopping, go to the beach, go for a hike. There's still a lot to do.
Okay.
Thank you for all you do.
I know, thank you for all you do.
It's an honor.
I appreciate you coming on Teddy Teapot.
Thanks, Teddy, and good luck. And you know, your daughter's in excellent hands, and Cedars.
Okay, thanks.
She will have the best care. I know it's really scary.
I know. But I
is she
know,
having
I,
a-
no, I believe that she's in the best care, and I really trust her doctors, and we just, you know, tomorrow's the day.
Yeah. And she, I'm assuming we're offline now. Will she be in hospital for 2 weeks?
They said 7 days, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hang in there.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Oh, well, Matt, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome. You're going to be great. Dub's going to be great.
Teddy Teapot listeners, I am not going to be doing a podcast next week. I'm just going to take a week to focus on Dove, and I appreciate you guys for tuning in, and I hope that you were able to learn some things and feel comfortable that you're able to go to the doctor, or that if your child has been diagnosed with torticollis, that your doctor knows what they're doing, because, you know, I feel like we got a lot of really good information from all of our guests today. What else? If you have any questions, please send them in to at Teddy Teapot, and we will try to get into some new topics in a couple weeks from now. Thank you, Matt.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe to Teddy Teapot on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.